You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I understood that question right till the end.
yeah, I went too far with it.
Hello and welcome to Midnight Chat, a podcast of casual interviews with leading musicians, published weekly at midnight to suit these informal and often under-researched conversations. This week's episode is hosted by me, Stuart Stubbs, editor of Loud and Quiet magazine. Thank you for joining me on tonight's episode of the podcast, where my guest is Orlando Weeks, who, as luck would have it, has released a brand new track today on the 16th of June 2021. It's called Big Skies, Silly Faces, and it's the first track to come from a new solo album that will be out a little later this year. Now, while we weren't allowed to go into too much details about the album just yet, we did manage to have a bit of a chat about it when Orlando came by our office last month to record this episode. It was great to spend a bit of time with him and meet him properly. I'd met him briefly, as you'll hear, a very long time ago, but it was great to actually sit down and also to just be in a room with somebody. It's been a while since we've been able to record Midnight Chats face to face, and hopefully this is a sign of things to come and it's getting back into a room with people, because it's always much more enjoyable and I think it's always a much better listen as well. Orlando, you will know, of course, as the lead singer of the Maccabees, who split up in 2016. But since then, he's been extremely busy writing and illustrating a book called The Gritter Man, which he also wrote and recorded a solo album for. It's a beautifully melancholic Christmas story that's narrated by Paul Whitehouse in the role of the Gritter Man. You can listen to it on streaming platforms and it can make you feel quite sad, but it is beautiful as well. After that came Orlando's first proper solo album, The Quickening, which he released during lockdown last year in 2020. Thank you to Orlando for taking the time and coming by the office to record this episode of the podcast. Thank you to you for listening. I really love this one. So here it is, Orlando Weeks, episode 109 of Midnight Chats. This episode of Midnight Chat is supported by Partisan Records, the independent label who have already given us Idols, Fontaines DC, Laura Marlin, Femi Kuti, loads of really great independent artists. And on the 25th of June, they will give us another one. Maple Glider is the Melbourne-based singer-songwriter Tori Zeech, whose debut album is called To Enjoy Is The Only Thing. As I say, it's out on June the 25th. It'll be available on limited vinyl that will be pearly green. There's also going to be a dinked edition, which will be hand numbered on green and lime marble splattered vinyl, along with a photo print. If you're a fan of Sharon Van Etten, Kaz McCombs, Bedouin, if that's your kind of thing, then Maple Glider is probably one for you as well. Thank you to Partisan Records for supporting this episode of Midnight Chats. End of the week. How's your week been?
It's been all right. It's been, I'm trying to think. I don't feel like I've done anything, no big grand moments this week, but just ticking along. I've been working on some music for a play, and I've been doing lots of that, and I've been doing just the beginnings of this, beginning to talk about new stuff,
new music and stuff. Yeah. What can you tell me about the play? Is that a play that you have devised, or have you been part of? Or?
No, it's a play that is at the National Theatre, and I am writing some music for it, some original music for it. And I went to, I think it was Monday, I went to the first read through of the first rehearsal, which I've never been to anything like that. Sure. And I loved it, and I felt so part of something bigger. And I think seeing anyone, I mean, anytime you see people that are very good at what they do, sort of in the raw, just doing it, is pretty inspiring. And it makes you feel, you know, I've really minded about the music I've written for it, and sort of it qualifies that a little bit, and also makes you want to keep being part of it and keep being sort of part of that process that they're all going through now.
Is it a big cast?
It felt big to me. I mean, but there's probably maybe 10, 15 actors.
So this was this a table read?
No, I think probably maybe it would have been a table. There would have been a table in
normal times.
In normal times.
Right.
But this was more...
Table's too dangerous right now.
Too dangerous for this theatrical read-through. So everyone was in the round and all laid out, and it all felt very distanced and safe. But still, just hearing actors give lines that you've read, but to suddenly it all starts taking on a much more life.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it.
Were they acting their lines?
They were
acting lines, because that sort of thing. I've said this before on this podcast, and I swear to anyone listening, I haven't got a problem with actors. But when I see people acting,
yeah,
especially if they're not in costume,
yeah, or cartoon characters, yeah.
There's part of me that kind of just tightens up when you see them doing the bit,
yeah,
and I think, but you're not that person.
Yeah,
I can't suspend my disbelief, and I studied drama.
Okay,
I think maybe this is it. Maybe it's there's something in me that's embarrassed about my past and the way, knowing that that was me. There was a terrible moment when I would have been that person, suddenly pretending, reading from this script.
Yeah.
And there's something in it. But you didn't get that. Were you just in awe of it and thought?
I would say that on the whole, my freeze up is probably similar to yours.
Mm.
But I think if people are doing it really well, I didn't get it anyway. I think... Also, I was feeling quite fish out of water, and maybe that helps with just going with the flow a little bit. I didn't freeze up, and I thought, God, they're good at this. I remember getting off the... I got off the tube, and I felt like I had a real sort of sympathy panic. That imagine to be an actor that's going in for that first read, especially quite a lot of them are quite young. I imagine haven't done a lot. Maybe this is their first thing at a... You know, the National Theatre, this big old concrete monstrosity. Well, yeah. I like it, actually. I don't know why I've got it. But it's a...
Huge institution.
Like, yeah,
it's the big time.
And you're going in there and you're going to read, you know, going to act.
And Orlando Weeks is going to be there.
Yeah, there's going to be this awkward man at the back. Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I didn't pursue acting. I mean, one, I was rubbish. But I could never in a million years have dealt with the nerves of that. Of the rejection of it, of not getting the thing, but also just the nerves of walking into that room. Awful.
Oh, I don't know how. I genuinely don't know how they do it.
How they do it. No. How are your nerves? Do you suffer from nerves?
Yeah. Oh, very nervous.
Nervous.
Yeah.
From day one.
Most of the time. Yeah.
Has that always been the case?
I think so.
I mean, lots of musicians aren't they? Like you're in good company there. There are so many singers. And front people, I mean all musicians, but people at the front who everybody thinks are the confident one, who are sometimes the least confident in the group or whatever. I think that's just a natural thing.
I think in a way what is maybe not appealing, but what you come to and maybe enjoy is too strong, but what this the sort of saving grace of that is that you're nervous until, or at least I have felt nervous until almost the day of the thing, because by then the boulder is rolling, and you're not going to stop it. You're too nervous to try and divert it anyway. So it's happening.
Yeah.
So the kind of commitment, that the kind of the step off the cliff's been taken, and that is, then it's kind of okay.
So your nerves don't evaporate once you're walking onto a stage. That the day before, you're all right the day of it.
I'm sort of all right the
You've
morning of it.
You've resigned yourself to it.
I'm committed to this, and there's no going back. And I remember, I think sometimes I feel the nerves creeping in towards the end of the set.
Right.
But I think it's more adrenaline than anything, and just not being very good at knowing how, or, you know, on an adrenal level, knowing how to compartmentalize that or push that into a kind of arousing hurrah or something. I don't know. Just
the big push, finale.
Yeah. I just feel it sort of.
I think maybe by that point in the show, people are there, right? Like, I feel
or
like,
or they're not. Either way,
yeah. I suppose sometimes they're not, and you feel this sudden responsibility of getting them over the line, and on their way home. Like, when was the first time you sang in front of people, and just how nervous you felt then? Like these actors who were going into their read through.
I remember thinking quite early on. I mean, not on my own, but really liking everyone singing in assembly. And is that's sort of slightly dodging the question, but
that's singing in a group.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then the first time was the first ever. Would have been the first. Oh, like in front of. Well, the first time we started a band, or like the first time Maccabees sat in a room together.
Well, I mean, as someone who sings terribly, and that's not modesty. I mean, I am appalling.
Can't sing, can't act.
Can't sing, can't act. That's why I turned to podcasting. As we were just saying before we started, I hate the sound of my own voice, so maybe this isn't my calling either. But as someone who can't sing, even singing in front of a band, like if I was with, I've been in bands, bad bands, I wouldn't sing. Even singing in front of a group of friends fills me with anxiety. Singing in front of people, I mean, we're on another level there. But would you have been, when you formed your first band, well, I mean, was the Maccabees your first, literally your first band? Okay,
yeah.
So the first time you got in a room with those guys and sang in front of them.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, I did it kind of incrementally, because I did it with sort of one of them, and then, because there was only me and Rob to begin with. Rob, who was played drums originally, and so I sang in front of him, and that was kind of all right. And then then I sang in front of him and Hugo, and that was sort of all right. And you know, so, and also no one else was going to do it. So if we were going to do this,
that happens.
Someone
so
has
much,
to do it.
That happens. Yeah. So, there are so many bands where singers have been asked, have said, no one else wanted to. Someone had to step up and do this.
Yeah,
because I suppose lots of people start bands when they're in that young and cripplingly anxious state. Nobody wants to be the singer. Nobody wants to put themselves out there. It's a big deal singing in front of people, I think. At any age, but especially if you're a teenager and you're starting out, I think it's brave, man. I think it's really brave.
Well, that's very kind. I'll remind myself.
Yeah, remind yourself of that. So where was the first... Can you remember what the first show was then when it was...
The first show was... Oh, no, it wasn't... Maybe it was on this... No, it wasn't on this road. It was on...
Kingsland Road.
No, it was it used to be called the Pleasure Unit.
Okay.
And it was on... I think it was the Bethnal Green Road. So is that the next one along from
right.
here?
Yeah.
And it's now called something like Star something.
Okay.
Just next to the Tesco's, if it's still a Tesco's.
Oh, the pub there?
Yeah, the pub big, on the corner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That... And it was great. I mean, just in terms of... I mean, in the same way of... As saying, you know, if no one's going to sing, all right, I'll sing. I think I felt so committed to the idea of just doing something. And if that something was this band, I'm going to do this and I'm going to make the flyers and I'm going to, you know, like all of that fun stuff. Mm. Doing the first gig, I didn't care. I had no idea how it sounded, because the chaos of it was, you know, how it sounded wasn't the point. The point was getting to the end of it and thinking we have carried all our crappy kit to here, we have set it up, we have managed to get through a sound check not knowing what it was, we've got to the end of it, and then all just sort of feeling the relief and the the celebration of achieving that was a big deal for us. Like, because I don't think we'd even, we were all sort of 19 or something. So I don't even, I mean, I hadn't really been to many, I don't think I'd been to many gigs in that kind of room. So I had not a huge amount to, you know, I'd been to some bigger concerts and stuff. And so I didn't have a lot to go on.
Yeah.
But we'd done it.
It's funny that, isn't it? Because I was exactly the same. I you know, I'd go to gigs at the end of school, but that'd be at Brixton Academy or something. Yeah. That'd be like a big show.
Yeah.
And then when you're a bit older, you go to uni or wherever, however you do it, you come across, you start to realize this world of people playing in pubs and small clubs, and you realize that actually you can go and see a gig every night if you want.
Yeah.
And but it's like a different world, and there are different types of shows, and it's just a different thing. It's like a really exciting thing.
And then open mic nights, and you know, that just all these funny offshoots of, you know, waiting for the next proper Brixton Academy gig you're going to go to.
Knowing you were coming today,
right,
I dug out something from the Loud and Quiet archive.
Okay.
It's right here.
Okay.
It is. Do you remember this? I'm showing
Orlando
a very early copy of the magazine, issue 21. We're currently on issue 147. So this is like two. I tried to work it out. I think it's 2007.
Okay.
I think it was February time. It's. I will post a picture of this like under this podcast so people can see what I'm tormenting you with, essentially.
Thanks ever so much.
Do you, I mean, I think you'll look good.
Do I mean, there was a good sort of almost question on that.
How do you generally feel about seeing like old pictures and stuff? Does, should I turn this over? Is that making you feel quite ill?
Well, I've seen it now, so.
Yeah, I think we don't need to look at that anymore.
I think I've probably got all I need to take from that.
Sure.
No, but I weirdly, I remember this.
You remember the back
kind
of
graphic
it?
Of, like, I just think there was that era, that kind of graphic was sort of everywhere. And that it's nice. I mean, what I'm seeing in that picture is no Rob, which.
Yes, yeah, I think you were just between. Without, I think it was that little window when Rob had left, Sam hadn't started yet.
Yeah, so I'm sort of trying to join some dots.
It was in Brixton.
Right, so.
I think it was at Roof's house, who was doing your press at the time.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was then. And I think, if I remember correctly, because I was there, I didn't do that interview, I didn't take the photos, but I was there just skulking around.
Okay.
And I seem to remember. You were all trying to get into Brixton Academy that night. Arcade Fire were playing, and I think you were all trying to hustle into that show.
Yeah, I think we got in.
Did you get in?
Yeah, because I mean, I definitely saw them at Brixton. I remember them playing at the end of the thing, playing Guns of Brixton, and walking through the crowd just with their acoustic instruments, and everyone following them out like Pied Pipers.
Right,
and it just like the chant of that. Of the kind of balls just sounding amazing.
Yeah.
And that was one of the great gigs I've seen there.
I mean, so that was obviously so long ago. We're talking
a long time,
2007 time. So, and so much has obviously changed since then. You've become a father in recent years. The band are obviously disbanded a few years back.
Yeah.
You've released a book, you've released it. I mean, I don't really know where to start. A solo album. I mean, how is post Maccabees life treating you just on a general scale? It's been, what, four years?
Yeah, I think so.
Doesn't seem that long ago to an outsider. Does it feel like a world ago?
I don't know about a world. And I also think we're all going to feel that because this year, or like the kind of COVID year, is going to make. Oh, no, well, that would explain why that feels.
Yeah.
But, I suppose what I'm trying to do is use the time well. And so I feel good because I feel busy, and the thing that I love most is, you know, in terms of work life is making stuff. So, and I feel like I'm doing a lot of that. Mm. So, it's been really good. I've been really enjoying my making.
Good.
Yeah.
I thought it was very classy the way you guys announced your final shows. A whole year, it was a year before, wasn't it? It was like You announced that the band was ending, and you said we're going to do these final run of shows, and they're in a year's time.
Yeah.
Like, when it actually came to those moments, because that then essentially gave you a year to prepare yourself for those shows and for the end of a band that had been your life for like a huge portion of it at that point, you know, 13 years or whatever it was. You know, you say that the day of a show, your nerves go.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel at those shows? At that, what was the final show like? And I suppose what's more interesting to me, I guess, is always what does the next day feel like after that?
Mm. Well, I think part of booking the shows was that we wanted to have them be these celebrations, and we sort of had we hoped enough people might come to one Ali Pali, but even to book that you need a big run up to book it. So did that. And then that, I think we booked that and that sold out, it became three. And it was, you know, if we hadn't had it that far off, then we couldn't have done, you know, out of the realms of my organizational.
Sure.
Anyway. And then on the day of the very final one, it felt really, really hard to explain, actually. Sort of sad and... Again, that's a sort of feeling of resignedness, if that's a word. That just definitely not nervous. Trying to just feel as much of it as possible, and knowing all of our families, all of our lots, you know, all the wider friends and everyone was going to be there was quite. Just that on its own is quite a lot to sort of keep in your head. And I remember getting a call quite late in the afternoon, and it was my mum saying that she was going to be able to make it, but my dad had tripped over something and had broken his arm and was wasn't going to come. And I remember thinking, I mean, once I knew that he was all right, just sort of thinking, that sort of took the edge off it a little bit, because it just felt like that is way, you know, is he all right? That's so I can just, it just, you needed, I needed something.
Maybe, do you think he did it on purpose?
He's a very good dad.
But he's not that good.
But yeah, yeah, he is as clumsy as he is good. So yeah, you'd have to ask him. But yeah, it just felt like,
it just shifted your perspective.
Just slightly took the kind of the heat off it.
Sure.
And then the next day, my partner and I flew first thing to France. We flew to Bordeaux for 3 or 4 days, I can't remember, and just walked around a beautiful city.
Mm.
Just to, because I think if I'd stayed...
You planned that, right? You were like...
Yeah,
I just thought, I can't go back to my house that night and wake up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you thought it would just be too weird and you wouldn't really know what to do, or you'd just...
I think it just felt like a good... I don't know what the thinking was, but at the time it felt like definitely the best idea to not be sticking around, to be in a sort of alien environment and to be looking at beautiful things and going to, you know, drink wine and whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Mooch.
Yeah, sure.
Was going to be a good antidote to whatever, the kind of complexity of whatever was going to be the kind of feelings after something like that.
And also just, I imagine that's such a, that's an almost the complete opposite environment to what you've just been through in every level. Like, you've been in a crowded place, you've gone from one pure extreme in every way, emotionally, physically, everything, to this quiet rural setting, just you and your partner,
exactly,
decompressing.
Yeah,
I think absolutely the perfect move. That sounds like that's what everyone should do. When did you go? Do you guys then move to Berlin at some point after that? Was that soon after that?
No, we were in Berlin for that, Berlin and in Lisbon in Portugal for the year when we were in the run up. to those final shows.
Was that where you conceived and wrote the Gritterman book?
Yeah.
Great. Okay, cool. Because I was going to ask you, okay, I'm just getting this straight, because I was going to ask you how, I didn't know if that came after that final show, mm-hmm. and I didn't know how long it had been. How long had that been in your mind, that to make that book and a record to go with it?
I hadn't done the illustrations, but I'd made something called Young Colossus, which was a sort of EP, but with a book.
Right.
And I'd like that, well, I mean, I suppose to answer your question, not terribly long. Hmm. I think just when we got to Berlin, I knew I'd need something to focus on. Yeah. And so we had, I'd been to the NME Awards sometime in early February of that year, and Foles had said that it was all right, and so I put all of my and my partner's luggage and equipment and music stuff on their bus, because they had a gig in Berlin 2 nights later, and they drove all my stuff to thing. And then when they got there, I went and saw the gig, and then got all the gear, went home, and I think in that window of time, I decided that this song that I had about a man that gritted roads, like a seasonal hero, I was gonna flesh that out a bit, and so by the time the gear arrived in Berlin, I sort of knew what I was gonna do, what I wanted to focus on.
The book that came out of it, it is brilliant. Actually, I was listening to it again yesterday on the train into here. It kind of made me want to cry. It's very sad, isn't it? What does it remind me of? It reminds me of like the snowman. Mm-hmm. I think that's partly your illustrations, which are brilliant. They're all done by hand as well, aren't they? Like
they are.
You
yeah.
Do everything.
And are a complete, you know, depending on your position, either a homage or a ripoff of Raymond Briggs. I remember for the paperback edition of it, I wrote to him saying, look,
he wrote you a
basically ripped you off. And he said, well, I appreciate it. And wrote me a kind of quote for the front of the book that says something like, it's totally unique. And so, and I can't help but think that that is all dry.
He's being quite sarcastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
a style all of his own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, it's beautiful. It looks amazing.
Thank you.
The pictures are so great. You studied illustration, right?
Yeah.
Was Briggs like a big? Has he always been someone that you've enjoyed that style, or was it just for this particular story, it fitted the bill?
That's the right way around. Yeah, sure. I definitely felt like I sort of grew up on his style, and I still love his style of illustration. Mm. But definitely for what I was doing, it felt like it would fit. And I tried others, and this was just the one that felt the most comfortable with the writing that I was doing and with the music I was making. Basically, only having a piano and a guitar, and very basic setup in Berlin, it just all felt like. And the way that I was making it was sort of trying to have those three elements have a conversation and that way fill out the rest of the project. Because I had this one song about a seasonal hero, and then I had the kind of illustration starting to form and sort of what he might look like. And then I had some of the writing and a bit, and then it just, yeah.
Took off. Where did Paul Whitehouse come into that? When did he come into the picture of it? How did you know him? Because he, for listeners that haven't heard the record, he reads the part of the...
He is the Gritterman.
He is the Gritterman.
Yeah.
He does a great job of it. It sounds great.
Yeah.
But did you know him before? How did you get him on board? Because he's the perfect guy for the role.
So I had my then manager had a friend who had done some writing with him, I think something to do with maybe even on the Far Show or something. And so we could get to him. And so I sent him everything I had. And I just said, if any of this feels like something you could talk to me on the phone about, then please can we do that? And he was great. He really understood it and wanted to do it, and has continued to be extremely generous with his time and energy and just, you know, everything that he can do. And yeah, it was a pleasure, total pleasure.
It's absolutely crying out for a TV version of it, like a Christmas special. You must have thought of it.
Oh, I would love that. I mean, it's
can we make that happen? Can someone listening to this make that happen? We need to get this. It could be like this year's Gruffalo.
Do you know what I would always love, how I picture it is, do you remember the film, or have you seen Bedknobs and Broomsticks?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, one of the great.
Lovely bit of string.
Right. Very good. So the way that uses real life footage against 2D animation is exactly how I think, because if Paul can be the Gritter Man in you know, physically as well as just in terms of the audio, then and then against this two-dimensional flat animation,
that'd
I think
be perfect.
It's perfect,
absolutely perfect, perfect length. It would sit well, I feel. BBC One, 4:25 Christmas Day. Will that do you?
That would do me.
Okay, right. Yeah. We'll get that sorted after this.
Yeah.
Do you have any ambition to do more kids' books? I basically feel that if you want to make some real cash these days, then make a kids' book franchise thing.
I think if you make a franchise anything, you're doing all right.
That's true.
But
you know, the person that made... Peppa Pig, I don't know their name, but I know that right now that they're laughing wherever they are right now. They're probably laughing
in a massive Peppa Pig shaped mansion. Just on the tip of their nose,
absolutely
howling with laughter.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you, but consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
And then after that came, see, I'm bringing us all up to date now.
This is great.
This is professional.
This
isn't
is one of those segues.
It was The Quickening, which I guess is your first, if you don't count The Gritterman as a solo album because it was a book and it was part of something else, your first album, which was released last year. Was it weird? Did it feel strange releasing your first solo album as someone that had been in a band for so long? Or did it just feel strange because you did it in 2020 during the COVID pandemic?
Mm-hmm.
And could you even work out at the time which feelings were related to which of those two things?
I understood that question right till the end.
I went too far with it. I should have just stopped.
No, it was good. And it's my, it's my shortcoming.
I suppose what I mean is, because you'd never released a solo record before, you've been in the band for so long.
Yeah.
And you finally get to do that.
Yes.
And it's probably going to feel strange in many ways. Yeah. Or maybe it didn't. You can tell me otherwise. But it's probably going to feel strange. But then on top of that, you're doing it during the pandemic, where releasing a record's weird anyway. So was it hard to, any feelings you had, was it hard to say, okay, well, I'm feeling this way because I'm used to having this band around me,
mm-hmm.
or compared to I'm feeling this way because there's a global pandemic going on?
I was so not relieved, but I was so ready for it to come out and very proud of it and really happy with how it turned out. And so in terms of just the release, I felt really good about it. I felt like it put a lot of stuff in, I'm sure for everyone, the work that you're doing gets sort of put into, you sort of see it for what it is when there's these much larger problems going on. But really the point was for it to be there, to exist and to have been released. And so the way that maybe it got a bit more swallowed up in that, I was sort of at peace with that.
In terms of when you put out The Gritterman and it was a book and a record, was it either intentional or just was it a happy coincidence that your first, when you've been in a band and that's such a big part of your identity, especially if you're the singer, I think, there's so many eyes on what you're going to do next in your first record. And I guess because the first thing that you released was also a book and it was part of something else, did that take the edge off?
I think on some level I felt like Gritterman was enough of a sort of, not eccentric, but sort of other enough and a whole package enough that it meant that whatever I ended up wanting to do after it, I could do.
Mm.
I liked that it sort of left I was sort of free to move, to step on from there in whichever direction, because I didn't know whether I'd want to go straight into doing another, maybe just a book, or maybe just try and write something, or I had no idea. And then I think just us finding out that we were expecting a baby, just it became almost, it's just that's the way everything started moving. Like when I would sit down to write, that's what I was writing about. And so slowly it sort of answered the question for me. Yeah.
I mean, the difference between the Gritterman music and those songs and The Quickening,
mm-hmm.
There's quite a contrast there in like the themes. Obviously, like the Quickening is all about your son and becoming a father, and kind of feels, it's a beautiful record. It also feels just quite a bit more, I don't know, like I was saying, like The Gritterman has got this kind of sad vibe to it. You know, old people make you sad and young babies make you happy, just generally speaking, you know? So it's got a totally different feel to it. How old's your son now?
He's going to be three.
He's going to be three.
Mm.
But at one point he's going to, he'll be old enough to listen to this record that is about him, very much about him.
Yeah.
What do you think he'll make of it?
Well,
Because what an amazing thing to have, you know?
Yeah. I suppose.
I mean, everyone's embarrassed by their dad, so he's obviously going to hate it in many ways.
Yeah,
because it's his right to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if he's clever like his mum, then what he'll do is listen to it and say, this is actually about you.
Yeah.
And then I'll sit down and be quiet, you know. But I think, and you know, if he were to say that, I'd probably have to say he's probably right.
Yeah.
Because I think it is a record about being witness to all of that stuff. And I'm glad that you felt like it was happy, and perhaps just comparatively with Gritterman, it is happier. In retrospect, I feel like that record didn't come close to exploring how happy and joyful I felt. I think a lot of that record to me feels like the anticipation, the suspense and the anxiety and the breath holding of waiting, you know. And so with this new record, that was definitely the beginning, the sort of starting point for it was trying to think, I haven't done that. And if he ever listened to it, which I, you know, whatever, then he would say, he'd say, well, it's about you, so I don't know why, you know, and also...
It's not that good a gift, Dad.
Yeah, he'd also say, it sounds very sad, like, why weren't you excited? And so I thought, right, well, in case that ever happened, I'd want to be able to show him the next thing that I made was an exploration in exactly that, like the bounce and pleasure and excitement and relief of his arrival. If my dad had made anything like that, I would find it very hard at no point to go and listen to it. So I suppose at some point he will listen to it. But thankfully that's a very long way off.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you can deal with that when it's way down the road. Don't worry about that yet. is the new record for him as well? Is it even more for him in a sense?
I think, again, he would in the future tell me that it's for me. But yeah. I think what I was trying to do was, and this was just the start of it, was just trying to think, like, it wasn't just, and you know, the anxiety and the anticipation, it was just I cannot wait, and I am so excited, and I am so, you know, happy, and I wanted some of that on record, you know, on record too. So
the record's done, right? It's completely done.
Yeah, finished.
Completely finished. It's going to be out later this year. We can say that much at this point. When you listen back to it, do you feel that you captured that joy that you were maybe wanted, that you felt was missing off that first record?
Yeah.
Do you think, yeah, I got it? Because I, on these podcasts, for example, I always have to do an intro bit at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I always sound really bored in them. And every time I go to do that, I've done this nearly 100 times, I'd say.
Yeah.
And when I record them, I normally do it in my car because I get a bit embarrassed about my partner hearing me in the house do it, because I tend to do it at home. So I go out to my car, and every time I try and put some real energy into it.
Yeah.
And I think I've nailed it.
Yeah.
I'm in my car and I'm shouting at my microphone.
Yeah.
I'm like, absolutely nailed that. That's the one.
Yeah.
And once I've edited it and I put it up and I listen back to it, and I just sound awful, really bored, really monotone.
Yeah.
And I can't capture it. So how do you feel with that? Do you have these experiences where you think you're getting it in the moment, and then afterwards you're like, I've still not got it. I'm still chasing that thing.
At the beginning, you asked whether I felt like I'd got it, and I think I have. Like, I think it's, you know, not completely by any stretch, but it is, even for me, and I don't like listening back to my stuff. I don't, you know, the mastering process where you're having to really listen for, I sort of dread it. But even I have enjoyed that. Like, I think it feels uplifting as a record, and I'm not sure I've, and I set out to do that. So it feels like I've sort of answered my brief. And in terms of giving you some advice for your in-car recordings, you should get, I mean, if you get Bullion to produce it, that would help. You could put music to it in general, you know.
Yeah. Well, no, it does have some music
but
on
do you
it.
Listen
that makes
to
it
that
worse.
Whilst you're recording your...
No, I don't. The recording is dry.
Right. Well, there we go.
That's it. I should...
Yeah.
That's the issue.
It sounds to me like you need accompaniment.
Yes. What are you doing tomorrow night? Can you meet me in my car outside the front of my house?
We'll do it.
I think, yeah, okay. These are good. That's a good tip. And maybe it is that. But it's good to hear that you feel that you've got it, that you've nailed it. And
well, I think nailed it. I wouldn't say that.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah. But I'm really happy with it, and I think in terms of it feeling like an uplifting record, I think it does that, and I think I feel the pleasure of it and the joy of it when I listen to it, and I hope that is what will be other people's experience of it.
So what's the rest of your year looking like? Obviously there's the record. I mean, I suppose that's impossible to answer right now due to like COVID restrictions still being lifted and stuff.
Yeah.
But you've got the play.
Yeah.
You've got the record.
Yeah.
Have you got anything else? You've got your son, obviously, to keep you occupied all the time.
Yeah.
That should be enough, but it feels you do seem to always have like lots of things going on.
That will be the thing, that making all the, hopefully having a bit more options in terms of making videos and doing performances, you know, not on the kind of pre-COVID scale, but whatever form that takes, I want to try and embrace that as much as I possibly can. And and then starting to think about whatever the next thing is.
Leading up to that Christmas Day premiere.
Yeah, exactly.
The Gritter Man.
Yeah, everything just slowly moving towards... Like a glacier, just...
to that moment.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
4:25, BBC One, The Gritter Man, Junior. For previous episodes of Midnight Chat, simply search your podcast app. And don't forget to follow or subscribe in order to receive new episodes as they're published every week at midnight. For more information on the music magazine that makes this series, visit loudandquiet.com.
Anyway, good night.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When it comes to your job, you're likely well-versed, but what about your skin? Life's busy enough. It doesn't have to be a big chore to get well-versed skin. Check out the dermatologist-tested, cruelty-free vegan skincare products from Verst. It's under $25 and available at your local Target store, making it easier than ever to take care of your skin from head to toe. Podcast listeners, here's an exclusive deal. 15% off at VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. That's VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. Verst, available at Target.